This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. I'm your host, Roger the Cowboy Morissette, and we have a great show for you tonight. Generally, the lounge is packed, but this evening, at least for the time being, there's only four of us in here. Think of it like the VIP area of the lounge as opposed to out in Gen Pop. We paid the extra money. We've got bottle service. And we have four of the brightest sports minds this side of the Mississippi, which is the east side of the Mississippi, which Cowboy Senior will point out numerous times tonight. So joining me tonight at this point, we have, again, as I said, Cowboy Senior, my dad, my buddy.
Hello.
And Cowboy Senior started out as just a 1 week guest, and the influx of positive feedback, the fans have spoken, and you know they like his straight down the middle, unbiased reporting that he gives us on a weekly basis. So he's going to be joining us for the long haul, at least through football season. So, Cowboy Senior, how's it going?
All right, I'm ready to roll.
Excellent,
football.
Excellent. Next up, the one, the only, Keith Schmidt. He's our baseball expert and thought he knew something about football until last week. President of the Ryan Fitzpatrick Fan Club, and he's wearing a Trent Richardson jersey right now. Keith, how's it going?
Not bad, not
all right,
bad.
All right. And finally, we have a special guest tonight who we can hopefully make a regular. He's an NFL expert and someone I've known for a long time. He's been a football fan since, I'd say, 1984. He started being able to talk in 1983. So, Matthew Rocky Boyle, he just goes by Rocky or Rock. How you doing, Rock?
Oh, wonderful, Cowboy. Thanks for having me on. Big fan of the podcast. Thanks for the time, brother.
Absolutely. How are things in the lounge for you, Rock? Is the cigar smoke thick? Is the couch comfortable enough?
Couch is comfortable. I can't even see you. The smoke is so hazy.
The girls are looking good?
I've seen better. I've seen worse. It's all love, brother.
It's just, you know, we got a late start tonight because we can't get Cowboy Senior out of the other couches in the back, if you know what I mean, you know? Guy's blowing his retirement back there. So, we have, like I said, we have a jam-packed episode for you tonight. We're going to continue our NFL previews. We're going to go, we did the AFC South last week, and we're going to do the AFC North this week. And if you tuned in last week, there was some pretty spirited debate on the AFC South, which is quite arguably the most boring division in football. So I don't know what to expect tonight. I just know I wore headgear and a mouth guard. And next after that, we have our standard baseball talk led by Keith. We're going to discuss the pennant races and, you know, maybe take a look at the Kansas City Royals. And, you know, we haven't talked too much about them, but I think it might be time to. And we're going to follow that up with Chad, and Chad Campbell will be joining us in the lounge later. We're going to talk about the Tony Stewart incident. All kidding aside, a person lost their life there, and we're going to discuss that. And last up, we're going to have a little MMA and boxing just to wet the whistle. So hope everybody's ready to go because it's AFC North time. So looking at last year's standings, this is how we generally roll here. The Cincinnati Bengals won the division. So we're going to start off with a preview of the Bengals. And why don't we turn it right over to the new guy, our NFL, another NFL expert here on the Sports Lounge, Rocky Boyle. What do you think of Cincinnati?
This year overall, generally speaking, it's their division to lose. I've never been a big fan of Marvin Lewis personally. I thought they had fantastic coordinators last year in both Hugh Jackson and Zimmer. Now that Zimmer's left to coach the Vikings, I wonder how his presence, you know, not being there on the defensive side is going to affect that raw, guttural Cincinnati defense. I like the promotion of Hugh Jackson to offensive coordinator. I see big things for both Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. I like the pick very much. Dalton got the money. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's worth it. See Flacco, comma Joe, but we'll get to Baltimore later. Overall, they go as far as Andy Dalton takes him. Generally speaking, I don't like his inconsistency. I think he still throws too many picks and locks onto A.J. Green too much. If they can develop a secondary receiver, I feel like they have an above-average offensive line. I feel like they could run the ball better if they chose to. All four teams who play in the North play in inclement weather, and that is a factor going down the stretch. So if they could, I'd like to see them run the ball a little more, to be completely honest. I know it's tempting when you have A.J. Green outside to just throw it up, and you know he'll make you look better more often than not. With that said, I just don't see them winning the division this year overall, and I'll get to the team that I think will win later on. I see them probably getting a wild card overall. I just see them being very inconsistent despite talent on defense and offense. I just overall, I don't care for Marvin Lewis, and I just don't understand some of the play calling at times. Maybe Jackson will alleviate that and make it a little more consistent on that side of the ball.
Excellent, excellent take there, Rock. So, overall, sounds like you're lukewarm on Cincinnati. Some positives, some negatives. And I think, you know, that's a good way to describe my feelings on the Bengals. Dalton, while, you know, not everybody's darling, and can he get you to the promised land? I don't know. Similar to Flacco in a lot of ways, in that all he's done is won. And if you look at, you know, if you look at that contract, I'm going to argue that that wasn't a bad deal, okay? And I think everybody thinks it's a bad deal. So looking at him, you look at him like he's Flacco, and I think that's a great comparison. Flacco, not, you know, you watch him play, and he certainly doesn't wow you, right? But all he did is win, and he won a Super Bowl. And how much did they have to pay him after he won the Super Bowl, right? So. If they were 11-5 last year, they made the playoffs, I believe, the last 3 years. They think they're on the cusp of winning that Super Bowl, and they're paying Andy Dalton now instead of waiting to pay him after the Super Bowl win. Just my own personal opinion.
But unlike Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton hasn't won a postseason game. I mean, it just seems like they took care of business in the division, split with the Steelers, and then got smashed in the first round of the playoffs the last couple years. So, I mean, maybe he does make that step and the gamble pays off. It remains to be seen. And especially in light of Marvin Jones's injury, I don't see them developing a reliable second option to complement A.J. Green. You double down on Green, you put 7-8 guys in the box, and you're creative defensively. Dalton can be had, in my opinion, and I don't feel he has the mobility to handle the blitzing.
How do you feel, I mean, as a secondary option to A.J. Green? I mean, I think Sanu is a decent number two. And one of the problems they had, skill position-wise, was they had two very talented tight ends and only one place to play them. And what I've read is with Jones's injury that you're going to see a lot of Tyler Eifert in the slot. I think it provides a hell of a weapon for them. And the kid's got a lot of talent. He was a first round pick, and he has kind of, you know, he's been a little underutilized, frankly, and this may give him a chance to break out. Cowboy Senior, been quiet over there. What do you think?
I like this team. I think I like this team a little more than Rock and you do. I'm not so lukewarm on them. I think they're a really good team that's ready to make that next step. I think you look, you know, obviously Dalton is going to be question mark, but quarterbacks take a little time to develop. This guy took him to the playoffs 3 times while he's developing. This could be the year that he graduates and makes that next step. They're already talking in camp about giving Bernard more touches, quite a few more touches, utilizing his ability even more, which should only help Dalton. Then you got Hill, who's already supplanted Ben Jarvis Green Ellis in that number two spot, who looks like a real talented kid. So maybe you're going to lean on that running game a little more. That can only help a quarterback. We're saying Jones out. Yeah, but they're saying he's probably going to be back right around week 5. So that'll give a few other guys a chance to step up a little bit. A guy like Sanu, who's normally played in the slot, is moving outside. Maybe that'll work better for him. And as you pointed out, Cowboy, I think Tyler Eifert is a talented player. And double tight end thing is pretty popular nowadays. And I think that could only make for some easier throws for Dalton. Play it a little closer to the vest. And then, you know, you're not so keying on AJ so much. Now maybe he gets some better looks where the defense can't key all over him. And speaking of defense, I love this team's defense. The secondary's strong. Their front seven's strong. It's just a complete defense. They're very good against the run. They're equally good against the pass. There aren't too many teams that stack up to the Bengals, to me, as far as being strong top to bottom. If you want to talk about the question mark, is Dalton going to step up? I'm saying yes. I'm saying Dalton has a good year this year. I'm saying this team is a contender in the AFC this year. Wouldn't be that surprised to see them in the title game or further, because they are a complete team.
Senior, I do like the defense very much. I would agree with you wholeheartedly. Burfict's a machine tackling. My question is Geno Atkins completely healthy? Is he ready to roll right out of the gate? You can't replace that kind of motor and that kind of intensity. He's so disruptive. A total team leader, as we saw in Hard Knocks last year. The guy is the genuine goods. That was their top priority, signing him to a long-term deal, which they did. And I haven't always been a big fan of their front office policies. They did right, and they did right by him. Is he going to be back and ready to answer the bell, do you think? Is he going to be back to the player that we're used to seeing?
I just want to make a quick, just to piggyback on something Senior said about Bernard. I think you're going to see him more involved in the passing game as well. If you remember when Hugh Jackman was in Oakland, Darren McFadden was a receptions beast out of the backfield.
No, absolutely.
He'd get six,
no,
seven
no
catches
question.
A game. And that suits Giovanni's skill set. So
absolutely. Talking about more touches, it's not all running. It's,
right.
He's going to catch the ball.
I think
out
he'll
of
be up around,
ball.
You know.
This guy is a top-notch back.
Yeah, he'll be up around 300 touches. So
Gio's a talent, there's no question. Yeah. He's an absolute stud.
I don't want to argue with expert Rocky Boyle, but I think I'm going to a little bit here on the Geno Atkins point. So this team gave up the tied for the least points in the AFC last year. Basically without Geno Atkins, right?
Yes, they played
so
great.
Even if he doesn't come back at full strength, they're probably, the second best defense in the AFC without him and the best with him? I mean, it's
a very good defense.
Yeah, I mean, they're deep.
It's not
they're
player defense. He's a key player, but he...
And
you're right, they are a very
and
good
I think the thing about... And I'm not particularly lukewarm on them. I think the switch to... Keith called him Hugh Jackman, so we'll call Hugh Jackson the Wolverine on here going forward. So I think the switch to the Wolverine as the offensive coordinator takes away the Achilles heel of this team. This is a team with that defense that should be running the shit out of the ball and trying to keep the game, keep a low-scoring game, and not make mistakes. And Dalton, in that respect, as a more of a, you don't want to say game manager because there's such a negative connotation to it, but Dalton was throwing the ball way, way, way too much last year. He's not that kind of quarterback. He's not the kind of quarterback that should be chucking it around like Matt Stafford, you know? So I think with Hugh Jackson, they're going to pound it out. They're going to pound it out, and they have the personnel to do it, and they're going to rely on that defense, and their defense isn't going to constantly be given short fields because all that they fancy Matt, Andy Dalton to be Steve Young or something. You know, let him be what he can be. You know, pound it out, throw it up to AJ. It's a great formula.
Yep.
And
opens up the play action.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think if Geno Atkins comes back and is at full strength, which at this point it seems like that's going to be the case. I mean, they're very much in contention in the AFC, and they're the kind of team that could give a team like Denver all they want in the playoffs because of that physical defense and because of that interior pass rush. So, yeah, I'm very high, very, very high on the Bengals. And AJ Green, you got a guy. He's just getting better too, and we've seen
top
how
five.
Yeah, one dominant receiver like that can make or break a team too. And he's not a guy who's been propped up by some great quarterback. You know, he's a Andy Dalton's okay, but that kid makes him.
Those two definitely have a connection, Green and Dalton.
AJ Green.
And it's just getting better and better. So
he has the best body control I've seen in the air since Randy Moss roamed the field, and that's the truth. He has unbelievable body control and great hands in the air. No denying that. Green is an absolute stud.
And Jones is a really good up-and-coming receiver, and we're talking like he's gone, and he's not. Okay, he's coming back. They're saying week 4 or 5. He's a beast in the red zone. He caught 10 touchdown passes last year. And also, to add to what Cowboy said about them running the ball, there's certainly all the signs that that's going to be the commitment. They're talking about Bernard getting the ball more. They used a second-round pick on a very good back, Jeremy Hill. I think they are going to be committed to the run. They're kind of telling us that. And if I had that defense, I would be committed to the run, too. I really like this football team. There aren't many teams. If you start going through all the teams in the NFL, there are very few that are as complete as this team. This is a real complete football team. They're going to be good. They're physical, and they're going to be good.
All right, so a little difference of opinion on the Bengals, and we like to embrace debate here. I'm surprised things have been this civil, and hopefully you guys can spice it up a little bit. I mean, the people aren't here to listen to us have tea and crumpets and agree with each other. Next up. So there was a tie for a second in the division, both teams at 8-8, and I get a feeling Cowboy Senior is going to have some stuff to say about both of these teams. So let's start it off with the Steelers. Always a favorite of us here in the Northeast. Pittsburgh 8-8. Really, they thrived once they moved to the that no huddle offense. Roethlisberger really seemed to thrive in the no huddle offense. They brought in LeGarrette Blount, big offseason acquisition. I like the two-headed running back. They lost Emmanuel Sanders, I said that I thought he was a great fit in Denver and he's a good receiver. He's a pretty good receiver, but I think the loss of him isn't that big of a deal, particularly with a guy like Marcus Wheaton coming in and ready to contribute. Antonio Brown is a top 10 guy, really good, really came into his own. And the defense is decent. So, you know, the defense is where the problems are. That and the offensive line, in my opinion. But let's turn it over to Cowboy Senior. He seems chomping at the bit here to talk about Big Ben and the Steelers.
Yeah, I think they started to slip last year, and we're going to see that slip turn into a slide this year. There's not too much I like about these guys. The defense is terrible. It's not even worth talking about. And this is supposedly the Steelers, who have always had the pride in their defense. What defense? And you look at the offense, okay. Yeah, you know, Antonio Brown's very good. They brought in Lance Moore. Okay, they got this kid Wheaton. Okay, they're actually, the latest I'm hearing from their camp is they got a kid named Justin Brown, who was their sixth-round pick in 2013, who never saw the field, who is thoroughly outplaying Lance Moore right now, who looks like he's going to be the guy that's going to get the playing time as the third receiver. You've got to be kidding me. Their running game, I don't like it. Okay, Bell's a good back, and Blount's okay. I don't see anything special there. All right, Ben's a tough guy. He's going to have to be a tough guy. He's going to take a beat in there. And then, you know, you want to talk about intangibles with this team, having maybe some leadership to get them through the hard times, because they're going to have some hard times this year. Well, we have great citizen number one, Ben Roethlisberger. I don't even think I have to discuss that. And that's your quarterback. That's the leader of the team. A despicable human being is about the nicest thing I can say.
Oh, boy, I see it here.
Okay, now we'll take it to the other extreme. The guy who's snapping him the ball, Maurice Pouncey.
Ugh.
Very good friends in his college days and his youth, was really wrapped up with Aaron Hernandez. Okay. We had a guy like that in New England. We didn't know it. They know what these guys were doing. They know this is a bad, bad dude. Right now, he's got a charge against him. It looks like he's going to at least get charged with misdemeanor battery and some kind of a brawl that he was in Miami. This guy is just a complete piece of garbage. This is your center, your leader of your offensive line. If you call that an offensive line, they have there. So they have no leadership. The intangibles are bad. The team's bad. It's just a really bad team.
Wow.
Sounds like Cowboys picking the seller.
So yeah.
For the Steelers.
It's where they deserve to be.
Cowboy Senior with the strong opinion. When that's what we're here for. I'm sure somebody disagrees with that.
Oh, wholeheartedly. I couldn't disagree more, Senior. Take all the stuff off the field aside. When they strap on the helmets and wear the laundry, it's immaterial. I wouldn't want Ben Roethlisberger to date my daughter. That's a fact. Would I want him leading my team in the Super Bowl with 2 minutes left with a below-average offensive line, as you so eloquently stated? Yes, I probably would, because of his toughness, his intangibles, his ability to take punishment in the pocket. With Pouncey being healthy, he anchors that line, so expect at least another half a yard from each of the Steelers' running backs, just solely based on his brilliance. You could argue that Pouncey is the best center in football right now, at the very least run blocking at the point of attack. Antonio Brown, I absolutely love Antonio Brown. Pencil him in for 90 receptions, 1,000 yards, and 8 scores. You can certainly live with that. Although they don't have, a bona fide number 2. You hope Roethlisberger can rally the troops. No question he's a good leader. He's a former Super Bowl champion. And in my opinion, I see them winning this division. Although, it's not going to be running away with it. It is a very tough, defensive-minded division. And the other intangible is the coach. In my opinion, Tomlin's still the best coach in that division. He'll coach up the defensive side of the ball.
Okay, he'll coach him up, but you said a defensive-minded division. What can you say good about the personnel they have on defense?
It's certainly not what it once was, but when you have good defenses, other teams overpay them via free agency.
I mean, they were horrible last year, and they didn't do it. That defense didn't do anything to get better.
That's not entirely true, Cowboys Seniors.
They were bad last year.
No, they did do some things to improve. Their secondary sucks, and I'll be the first to say that. Ike Taylor is big time on the downside. He got fried up like nobody's business last year, and they brought him back because they couldn't come up with anything better. William Gay is not bad as the second cornerback. He's okay. He had a decent year. Shazier, who they drafted 15th overall. I mean, if you take a guy 15th overall, I suppose you could consider that addressing a defensive need. What they're saying about him in camp is they're making him the new age Polamalu, lining him up all over the place. He's an athlete, and he's going to be... And that he's going to be good. And Polamalu is still, if he can stay healthy, which is not a given, is still at the very least a decent player. And he does provide some leadership that's not, going to end out in the jailhouse as some of the other guys.
Big hitter for sure. Still, even at this point, his cover skills. He was never the best cover safety to begin with, but man, that guy, when he lines you up, he still hits like a ton of bricks.
And Timmons is a Pro Bowl linebacker, so I don't think the defense is good. You can really burn them through the air, but Shazier should help with the pass rush, I think, too. And Jarvis Jones, who they drafted last year, could come into his own. He was a really good pass rusher, and he had a good rookie season, so. We'll see. I don't think the defense is quite as bad. I mean, we talked about some shitty defenses last week. Indianapolis. They're not on that level. And I think Cowboys Senior, surprisingly, seems to have a personal vendetta against Pittsburgh. Not at all shaped by the Patriots shirt he has on right now.
This is 2014. Do you know what happens to teams with bad secondaries in today's NFL? It's a passing league. These guys are going to get fried all year long. This is a bad team, I'm telling you. And they may crumble from the inside when things start going bad. If Pouncey ends out in jail, the rest of that offensive line is literally paper mache. It's awful.
DeCastro is good. He was hurt last year, right, too? David DeCastro is a good player. Roethlisberger
doesn't make it. I don't care how tough he is. He doesn't make it to week 6 this year playing behind that offense.
Wow, Cowboy Senior. So, I mean, they're built a little bit for their division, too. I mean, if you're going to have a team that has a crappy secondary, playing Dalton, Flacco, and, Hoyer or Manziel, 6 of your 16 games. It's not exactly Brady and Manning every week.
Against those teams, they'll make them all look like Breeze, Brady, and Manning. That's who those three quarterbacks will look like against that secondary. They're awful. This is a bad team. You guys got to call it like you see it. They're terrible.
I'm calling it exactly like I see it, Cowboy Senior. That's the point of the show.
Senior, as always, impartial, right down the middle.
Keith, what do you think about Pittsburgh? You're kind of the deciding vote here.
I'm kind of in the middle on them. I will say this, Roger. I think they are the worst defense in their division. I think the other three teams have superior defenses to theirs.
By far.
Polamalu is the key. If he stays healthy, the defense is much better.
When
with
was the last
him
time Polamalu
than
made
without
a play?
Him. Oh, he makes plays. Every time he's on the field, he makes a play. He always makes plays. You know, he's like Bob Sanders from the Colts. If you remember, when Bob Sanders was healthy, that was a completely different defense. When he was out of the game, teams would shit all over him.
You know,
they'd kill the Colts,
game,
right?
When you're watching a game, you know, on TV, you're not seeing it live. It always ends out. If the play always ends, you know, the guys you see are the guys that are around the ball. The only time I see Polamalu was in the Head and Shoulders commercial.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Nice pop culture.
He's probably a Hall of Famer, Cowboy Senior.
How famous is he for that one that play where he jumps the line and hits the running back 5 yards?
That was Chris Johnson, I believe. He's
done that more than once.
But you've seen him miss plenty of tackles as well. And I would counter, if Ladarius Webb's hurt, Baltimore's defense is in a lot of trouble.
No, that's a great
and special teams.
That's a great segue. So Keith seems to be in the middle. I'm pretty positive on the Steelers. Rocky's made a couple of different points. I think Cowboy Senior may have swayed him. And Cowboy Senior is very, very negative on the Steelers and actually has one more point to make.
I don't have the schedule in front of me, but there's just one game with the Steelers I point at. I believe it's either week 6 or week 7. It's somewhere in there anyway. The Steelers are playing the Jets this year. Now, it's a Sunday at 1 o'clock game, and you know how we have our primetime games, and we're all football fans. No matter what game it is, everybody's going to be tuned in. If that game was in primetime and the only option, I'd probably watch the Westminster Dog Show or a tractor pull before I tuned it in.
Wow.
The sad thing about it is one of those teams gets a win that night.
Cowboy Senior bringing the poor Jets down.
Guess we know where he's
for no reason.
With the Jets.
So for those counting at home, Cowboy Senior during our AFC South preview figured out a way to call Eli Manning a bum, and during our AFC North preview has insulted the New York Jets and our fearless leader here at Place to Be Nation, JR, who's a massive Jets fan. And I apologize, JR, we're going to have you on to have it out with Cowboy Senior. And, you know, just want to say that the Cowboy Senior's thoughts do not reflect the thoughts of Place to Be Nation.
I can't wait to hear what he thinks of Baltimore.
And that's a great segue, Keith. So next up we have the Ravens, also 8-8, coming off their Super Bowl win, they were really, in my opinion, a 6-10, 5-11 team masquerading at 8-8. I think they got lucky to go 8-8. They're very simple to me, and I think a lot of teams would take this if you said you're going to win the Super Bowl, your quarterback's going to take all the money you have on the cap, so you're going to have to lose all your best players, and then you're going to be shitty for the next 5 years. I think that's what's going on in Baltimore. And I think roster-wise, I mean, I don't want to put words in Cowboy Senior's mouth here, but it sure felt like he thinks...
Your take on this, do you think Ray Rice...
Sorry about that. It sure seems like Cowboy Senior thinks Pittsburgh's the worst team in this division. I think roster-wise, the Ravens are considerably worse than the Steelers. I think, kind of top-down quarterback. I mean, I don't like Flacco, but Roethlisberger, to me, is a much better quarterback than Flacco.
10 times the quarterback, Cowboy.
Antonio Brown's a much better receiver than Torrey Smith.
Torrey Smith runs one route. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, he's improved a little bit, and maybe Flacco doesn't help him. Steve Smith is completely over the hill, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think it's an awful signing. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I think they should have just rolled with Marlon Brown as opposed to Steve Smith.
Well, it's nice to see that Baltimore still recycles.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point, Rocky. Dennis Pitt is a good tight end. That's what we'll say about that.
Excellent tight end. In fact, I do like the Flacco to Pitta connection. It reminds me very much of a young Tony Romo and Jason Witten, who were bunkmates, who had a lot of chemistry on and off the field. I actually look for Dennis Pitta to have a very nice year.
Yeah, and I'm not the biggest Tony Romo guy, but he is five times the quarterback that Joe Flacco will ever be.
Concur.
Flacco, I mean, he's got the... As we come into a statistical age, right? As we come into a statistical age where we look at where we can really dive into what makes players good and what are statistical outliers. This he can win the big one thing. I think takes a little. I think it's kind of gotten a life of its own, and the old school people think it's too important. I mean, this guy has been average his whole career. Average Flacco, he wins a Super Bowl, and he got hot. He did the New York Giants thing. Decent regular season, get hot right at the right time, win the Super Bowl. And I mean, more power to him. I mean, he played astoundingly good in those playoffs. But if you want to talk about a small sample size that doesn't match up to what the rest of his career was, that was it right there. What did he throw, 11 touchdowns and no picks in that playoffs when he's been a basically 50-50 guy his whole career? So for them to give in, I think he should have gotten paid for that, but for them to give in to his ridiculous contract demands when there's no way in hell that anyone else was going to give him anywhere close to the money that they gave him, and to decimate their team, did a disservice to their fans, and they're going to be not very good for the foreseeable future. We're not going to get into the whole the moral aspect of the Ray Rice thing here, but obviously running back's an issue. I mean, just on based on production last year, I mean, Rice is clearly losing a step. Bernard Pierce could be decent. I mean, a lot of it was the line, but I just don't. There's not a lot to. And the vaunted Ravens defense was decimated by Flacco's contract. So there's not a lot to like for me here in Baltimore. I don't think they're very good at all. And Rocky, how do you feel about the Ravens?
Well, overall, I generally agree with what you said. Their defense is a shell of its former self. I mean, off the top of my head, they lost Paul
Kruger.
Kruger. They lost Danelle Ellerbe. They lost Ray Lewis. They lost Ed Reed. I mean, the leadership, the intangibles, you just can't replace that in a season or two. I mean, had it not been for an agent snafu, they wouldn't even have got Elvis Dumervil at the 11th hour either. To me, I like Jimmy Smith in the secondary. He's a good player. Their front seven's not nearly what it once was. To me, I agree. I see Cleveland and Baltimore fighting for the basement in this division, 100%. And I think Ray Rice is completely done, 100%. I think the sooner they switch over to Pierce or whoever they like in the practice squad, the better. You got to move forward.
Yeah.
The ride's over. Bottom line, I don't see Baltimore winning more than six games this year.
And the problem with Rice is, I mean, is that Pierce isn't very good either. I mean, it's not like you have this great guy waiting in the wings. And the one thing I'll say, the one thing they have going for them that can make a big difference, and we talked about this with the Titans last week, is that John Harbaugh is a hell of a coach. You can't take that away from him. He's a great coach. And if anybody can will this below-average roster to 10-6, to 11-5, it's him. But I just don't see it with them this year. What do you think, Cowboy Senior?
Well, I'm going to try and point out a positive of the Ravens, seeing you guys just... And I agree with a lot of the negative things you say. I really don't like their offense. But their defense is above average, okay? It's not terrible. Last year, they finished 11th in the NFL against the rush, 12th against the pass. That's not terrible. And they did some things to make it better. If they get T. Suggs and Dumervil coming in off the edges, they're going to get pressure on quarterbacks. The inside linebacker that they drafted with their first-round pick, C.J. Mosley from Alabama, looks like an absolute stud. We're hearing nothing but great things about him, so that's going to help them even more against the run. And this kid, Timmy Jernigan, the nose tackle from Florida State, all you're hearing about is he lives in the backfield. This is a 6'2", 300-pound player with a lot of quickness that's just They're saying if we wouldn't be saying so many good things about Mosley, we think we'd have the best defensive rookie in the league in Jerrigan. So if these things are true, this defense was already above average last year. It could be good. This could be a good defense. Offensively, I can't argue with too much with what you guys said. I'm not sure that Rice is done or Pierce isn't that good. I think their offensive line doesn't get any penetration. They have all, they're pretty good pass blockers. They got big pass blocking offensive linemen. It's hard to run the ball like that. They paid Flacco all that money. They're mostly concentrating on trying to take care of him, I guess, and it's not the greatest group of receivers at all. I mean, Torrey Smith, for all we bashed him, he's put up some decent numbers in his career. And the offense has shown that they can't get hot at the right time like they did a couple of years ago. Who knows? To me, they're not that bad because the team isn't that bad because any team with a solid defense has a chance to win some football games. I don't see them anywhere near as bad as Pittsburgh because of their defense. Because they're a good physical defense and they're going to be better. So I'm not saying they're a real good team. But I'm not saying they're as bad as Rock and Cowboy are saying. I'm more a little in the middle with the Ravens, thinking they could be kind of the same kind of 500 record as they were last year. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. They also have, I mean, I know it doesn't mean that much, but when you've got a good defense, putting those 3 points up sometimes when your offense doesn't move it that much can mean something. Tucker's obviously, I mean, arguably top two or three kickers in the NFL. He's got a lot of range and he almost never misses. Okay, if anybody wants to run with that, go ahead.
I agree with you, Senior, on Baltimore's defense. I disagree with all of you on their offense. I think this is going to be a good offensive team. They have two good running backs, Rice and Bernard Pierce. Gary Kubiak's there now, and he's bringing that zone blocking scheme with him. They're going to bounce back big time this year in the run game, both of those guys, Rice and Pierce. Torrey Smith, he's a decent receiver. You know, he's, like you said, he runs that one route, that go route. But you know what? Nobody can seem to stop him. And Steve Smith, okay, yes, he's getting older. And maybe he's not a number one receiver anymore, but he won't be facing double coverage every week anymore like he did in Carolina. He is going to be a great possession receiver. He's going to put up better numbers than he did last year in Carolina being the number one. And nobody mentioned the third receiver. Was it Marlon Brown? Is that his name?
I mentioned Marlon Brown. I said he was better than Steve Smith.
Well, I disagree there, but I think he's going to be pretty good, too.
He's a good red zone guy.
Pitta and Owen Daniels at tight end. I think this offense is going to put up some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, Keith, and I mean, that's a good, and that's why you're here, and that's why we have the four of us here, is that it's a great point on Kubiak. I think that you say, when you say that zone blocking scheme really favors a guy like Pierce, who's a one-cut downhill runner. Ray Rice is more in that Barry Sanders kind of mold that I think he's not a one-cut-and-go guy. He's a dance-around. You know, I think Pierce is obviously going to be starting the first 2 weeks of the season, and I think there's a good chance he doesn't give the job back.
I don't think so. I think Ray Rice is going to become the third down back. And the passing back, being on
passing
back.
That's an absolute great point.
He's got good hands.
In addition, Justin Forsett ran in a similar offense to the zone blocking. He may very well eat into Rice's touches as well. I'm not a huge Forsett fan, per se, but I could certainly see him nipping at Rice's heels as well in light of everything that's happened recently.
And Forsett, if I'm not mistaken, played for Kubiak in Houston.
I believe you're correct.
He's very familiar with that.
That is a similar blocking scheme as well. Good call.
Justin Forsett, for Sports Lounge fans who don't know, was the guy who scored that 80-something yard touchdown where he got tackled and they didn't call him down. And then Kubiak challenged the play. This was a great Gary Kubiak moment. Kubiak challenged the play, but it was a touchdown. The touchdown's challenged automatically, so he wasn't. So now the touchdown's not challenged automatically. It stands, even though he got tackled after that 4 yard gain. So Justin Forsett and Kubiak have a. Well, no, Kubiak didn't challenge the play. It was Jim Schwartz, the other moron. But we'll get to them in a few weeks. But, yeah, great debate here. I like.
Also, Cowboy, if I may add one point to your John Harbaugh take, I agree. Despite what people think about Harbaugh and him being under his brother's shadow, he outdueled him in that Super Bowl, got the win, and managed a lot of delicate egos along the way.
Bottom line. With less talent. San Francisco was a better
team. Fran on paper should have won that Super Bowl, Keith. There's no question.
And I mean, in his brother's shadow, I mean, it's not, if he's in the shadow, it's not a long shadow, I think. You know,
he's taller, isn't he?
If you were to, I mean, if you were to, you know, ask teams who they wanted to start a franchise with, I think, you know, you might get 18 that said Jim, and, you know, the others say, so they say John. I don't think it's a huge disparity. All right, great stuff, guys. So now moving on to, I feel like this one's going to be divisive. Moving on to the Cleveland Browns. So the Cleveland Browns are, in the city of Cleveland in general, big, big few months for the city of Cleveland. They don't have a ton going for them. LeBron's back. Johnny Football's in town. There's the sense of hope is in the air. LeBron's attending practices. They could use him to suit up as a second tight end to Jordan Cameron. But, you know, I'm going to go on record here. And I mean, if you listen to our sister podcast at Place to Be Nation, The Extra Point, I did myself and Andy Flanagan, the Lone Ranger, who's usually in the lounge but is nowhere to be found tonight. We did a draft preview and then a draft review where I sung the praises of Johnny Football. I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I said I thought his floor was a prime Doug Flutie, meaning that's the worst I think he'll be, which is not too bad given what's out there. With that said, I don't think he should start the season as their starting quarterback. I think they were good with Hoyer last year, and I think if Hoyer stays healthy, they would have been right around that 8-8, 9-7 mark. With what Josh Gordon did with those complete stiffs throwing to him. But I think Hoyer should start the season at quarterback. But after a few weeks, maybe start working Johnny in, and then by midseason, Johnny takes over. I mean, the kid's a winner. The kid can improvise. The kid, unlike, some people think he's a Tebow kind of guy. Unlike Tebow, he can throw the football, and he can throw it accurately. He's got balls of steel, which I hope they're working on him with. I mean, that was my big concern with him, and I think his best comp for a quarterback in the NFL right now is RG3. He reminds me a lot of RG3, and I have the same injury concerns with him that I did with RG3, and that the kid's got a pair, you know, and he's gonna lower his shoulder on the wrong linebacker. He's not that big, so hopefully they're teaching him how to slide. Overall, I think this is a team that could surprise. I think this is a team that could surprise and finish second in this division. Even without Josh Gordon, good defense, good offense. I know nobody wanted to coach there, but I think the guy they ended up with is a damn good coach, Patine. I like their offseason moves. I really like the Ben Tate, Terrence West combo play at running back. I don't like their receivers outside of Josh Gordon. I think Miles Austin, I mean, the guy's always hurt. If he could regain some of the form he had in a few years ago in Dallas, he's a steal, but he's always hurt. Andrew Hawkins is a guy who I like to watch, who can be a really good slot receiver. Uncle Nate Burleson, I know Rocky's got a soft spot for him, but I mean, he's a below average guy. I would be honest about it. But Jordan Cameron's a weapon at tight end. He's a he's one of the best tight ends in football, and I think he could take another big step forward this year. I mean, and the defense is young and the defense is good, and I love what they did with their first round pick. But I'll talk about that later. Cowboy Senior.
I kind of like the Browns, too. So I think we're going to be in the... Well, we can't be in a minority because there's four of us here, but I kind of like a lot of the things that they're doing. Okay, you talk about the draft pick, obviously. Justin Gilbert first to team up with Joe Hayden gives them as good a pair of corners as there is in the NFL. Mm-hmm. The defense was good last year, especially against the pass, and it just got better. So they have a good solid defense all the way through. Pretty, other than the Steelers, that's the theme of this division, though, solid defenses. And we look at the quarterback situation. I don't think Brian Hoyer is a bad quarterback. And Johnny Football, who knows? Who knows what he could end up being? But even if they have to go Hoyer, I don't think he's bad at all. I think he's workable. You talk about the receivers, a guy like Hoyer is really going to use Cameron. It's a perfect target for a guy that doesn't have a huge arm. And the guy, the wide receiver that you didn't mention, who is the guy they're talking about in camp, who's outshowing all the other wide receivers, is Travis Benjamin. They're singing his praises. Patin loves him. He's looking like without Gordon, he could be their number one. I don't like Miles Austin at all.
Miles hamstring.
Hopefully Hawkins turns out okay. I think the key to this offense is Ben Tate. If Ben Tate stays healthy, he's got the size to be a guy that can pound that ball. And he's pretty quick. He can take a lot of pressure off Hoyer or Johnny Football. And who knows, if Johnny Football does take over and kind of spreads things out a little bit, that could open a lot of running lanes for Tate. Tate could be a big key, but I think it's a solid defensive team. They're probably young and going to get better defensively. And the offense definitely has possibilities. They're the most interesting team in the division, maybe the most interesting team in the NFL. They're going to be a fun team this year, right? I'm with Cowboy. I like the Browns.
So just a point on Ben Tate. Apologize for that interruption there. Cowboy Senior still getting into the digital age. Forgot to mute his phone. So a point about Ben Tate and Keith. So given that superstar stud Trent Richardson, this guy with, I mean, top 20 level talent at running back, was only able to manage a meager 3.5 yards a carry behind that awful offensive line featuring Joe Thomas.
That's a road grader too.
Probably the best tackle in football. Alex Mack. I mean, Ben Tate having a good year. If he can muster 3.1, 3.2, does he go to the Pro Bowl? Obviously, that's a rhetorical question, and you should really listen to last week. Keith can't say a word. He can't say a word.
He has a lot more weapons than Trent Richardson had. He was facing 8 and 9 in the box when he was there. They actually have a quarterback that can throw the ball now with either Hoyer or Manziel, plus Jordan Cameron. Josh Gordon obviously is not going to be there for hopefully only 8 weeks, and it's not the whole season. Okay.
Josh Gordon was there when Richardson was there.
Yes, he was. But he was a rookie, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's a good rookie.
Okay. Nobody knew who he was yet.
Rocky Boyle.
Yeah. All right. Here's where I disagree. Gloves coming off. First of all, on offense, let me just take it back a step. Let's start with Cleveland's firing of Rob Chudzinski after all he does is plug Hoyer in. He leads him to a 3-0 start. And then gets unexpectedly hurt, and then they just break the guy off and just hire someone randomly. I believe that's their third new head coach in the last 3 seasons. You can't have any continuity in the program if you continually change personnel. Secondly, the looming suspension over Josh Gordon's head. You draft a quarterback when you have a viable winner who hasn't lost a start the prior year. Your biggest hole's at wide receiver, and you don't take a receiver. You potentially could get Sammy Watkins, and you drop the ball. Thirdly, and no one's talked about this, TJ Ward's a very underrated player. He is a really good safety. He could hit. He could cover. He was a very, very good safety who just played in a lackluster market. Granted, I think he got a little bit overpaid. You replace him with Dante Whitner, who's a big hitter, but to me, I just think it's a little bit of a downgrade overall.
It's not much of a downgrade, Rocky. Come on.
In addition, I don't see it overall. If they plug Manziel in, it's not because they want their football team to win. It's so Pink Hats in Cleveland buy football tickets. Hoyer, to me, you win sooner with him, with or without Josh Gordon. Now, whether he comes back or not, I had talked about Baltimore recycling Steve Smith. Consider Burleson and Miles Austin dumpster fire pickups. The most noteworthy thing Miles Austin has done in the last 5 years is tag Kim Kardashian. It certainly isn't for his on the football field accolades. Nate Burleson injured his arm, reaching back in his vehicle, grabbing a pizza box. I'm not making that up. It's absolutely accurate. Feel free to Wikipedia or Google that fact. I mean, to me, Patin, I agree he's not a bad coach, but it's just more like the upheaval of, what they were trying to build. It just makes no sense, and if I was a coach on that staff, I'd be petrified to do anything that remotely seemed like discipline in fear of losing my job the following season. Cleveland does have some good pieces, and I love the Justin Gilbert pick. I think he potentially is going to be a Pro Bowl corner within the next year or two. He's that freaky athletic. And Joe Hayden, I mean, you could argue is the best player on that team. I absolutely love the secondary as far as the corners go. And their front seven, yeoman-like, they work hard, they play well together. They weren't penalized very often. They kept them in a lot of games. Bottom line, I think they're about a year away. Here's what I think is going to happen. If they let Hoyer play the year and groom Manziel, I think it will be better for them for the transition. If Manziel comes in early because of fan demand for the wrong reasons, they're going to go in the toilet. They may not win a game after Thanksgiving if that happens. And again, they still might finish out of Baltimore. I see them at about 5 to 6 wins overall, depending on what they do with Hoyer. If Gordon comes back, you might bump that up a game or two, but it remains to be seen.
We'll get to the predictions in a little bit there, Rocky. I'm gonna take a minute here to rebut just about everything you said. So, you would have drafted Sammy Watkins, correct, at 4?
Yep.
Okay, so that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And here's why. Do you know what they got for the 4 for moving from 4 to 9? What they got?
Refresh my memory.
They got the Bills' first round pick next year for doing that.
Well, that's good.
For moving from 4 to 9. So would you rather have Sammy Watkins or Justin Gilbert and the Bills' first round pick next year? I think the answer is obvious. You don't even have to say anything.
Yeah, it doesn't fix the hole at wide receiver. So it's a fair point, but it's not the hair all end all. They still have a gaping black hole
again. So they're a young team. They're a young team in the way. So there's the Jacksonville way to do things, right? Which is draft Blake Bortles 3rd overall, take the bad value, not acquire assets. I mean, you're a Patriots fan. The Patriots have built their dynasty by acquiring assets, by acquiring multiple assets. Moving down 5 spots and getting a team like the Bills, who could go 2-14, that could be the number 1 overall pick in the draft. And the gaping hole at receiver is going to be at the most. If he gets suspended, one, he wasn't suspended yet at the draft.
I was just going to say that.
Right. So they weren't 100. They didn't know yet, Rocky. And two, even if they knew that he's going to be suspended for 16 games, I think he's going to get 8. I don't know why it would take so long for the arbitrator to rule that he's going to just keep the same suspension.
I was under the impression that it was either he was going to walk or get a year. No
so
in between.
They can do, I read that they could do a settlement, that they would have the ability to settle with, the NFL could settle with the Browns.
Oh, if Gordon gets off, it looks great. No question.
Even if he doesn't, to call it a gaping hole at receiver, at most it's for a year. And I mean, if you want to say Gordon's a risk, that it could be, you know, it could be a lifelong suspension, that's a fair point. But I don't think there was a huge need for them to draft a receiver in the first round. I mean, he's probably the best receiver in football that you have on your team.
But if you're going to take Manziel later in the first round, why not get him someone to throw the ball? Why not get him someone who's actually a legitimate target? Because you can't count on Gordon being there.
I mean, do you only think of football? Like, if you're drafting for a team, do you only care about this year?
No, of course not.
Right. So even if he doesn't have Gordon this year, he's going to have him after that. And now what you've done with the pick of Gilbert is, I like this, I know Cowboy Senior is going to hate this because it'll be something praising the Jets. But the Jets, when they were at their pinnacle, what made that defense? Darrell Revis on one side, Cromartie on the other, right? So Darrell Revis and Joe Hayden, very, very similar. Shut down, follow your best receiver around corners. Cromartie and Justin Gilbert, very, very similar players, right? Super athletic. Maybe they'll develop into the number one, but a hell of a number two. So they've got, and cornerback, as we know, having that shutdown corner is the most important position in football. If you can have that guy, they have that guy, and they put another guy on the side of him. So they're built for the future. Dante Whitner is just as good as T.J. Ward. I think that T.J. Ward's a run stuffing safety. Whitner's a run stuffing safety too. You know, they both have a little bit of coverage issues. I mean, they're very good.
And I'm sure Whitner was a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and the guy they drafted in the second round, Joel Bitonio, is lighting up camp. They say he's an absolute beast, kind of a Logan Mankins-y type of guy who's going to step right in and be a 15-year starter. And, I mean, I just, As I said, they shouldn't play Manziel right away, and I don't think they're going to give in to fan demand. I think that fan demand's only... I mean, they've been hard on Manziel. If you watch how they've been with him, they haven't exactly just given him the keys. They said right from the beginning, you're number two. Yeah, they had him practicing with the third team at first. They gave him all sorts of shit about what he's doing on the weekends. You know, and they're making him earn it. And he looked really good in that first preseason game. And if he starts week one, it's because he earned it, not because they're giving it to him so that to put asses in the seats. I don't believe that that's what they're doing.
I don't think the Browns have trouble selling tickets anyway.
Right. Of course. Yeah. What the hell else does anyone in Cleveland have to do? Sorry, Cleveland, but it's true. So, I mean, I think, and Terrence West is another guy. I mean, they had a great draft. Terrence West is another guy. As good as Ben Tate is, I mean, he isn't the most durable guy in the world. He doesn't need to be out there three downs. He would be much better off as a guy around 17, 18 carries a game than 25. And having Terrence West gives them that flexibility. So, Rocky, I think you're way, way off base on the Browns. I see a team that if things break the right way this year could be that 10-6 team. I don't think that's going to happen, but I see a 7-9, 8-8 team pointed straight up doing things the right way. Your point about them firing the coach is valid. That was it's a knee jerk reaction.
I thought we were doing 2014 predictions. Yep. Yeah, they might be good in 2 or 3 years. We're talking about 2014 in the short term. What they did hurts their team. I love the Gilbert pick, and I do like Terrence West. You can't coach speed, and he's got an abundance of it.
You can't say you like the Gilbert pick and say you would have taken Sammy Watkins.
Well,
because you couldn't have them both.
But here's the thing. I mean, they did what they did, and I do like the Gilbert pick, but I don't think it was their best move. You could argue Hayden's the best player on that team. You could put a less than Justin Gilbert corner on the other side. And if you feel Witten is as good as you touted him to be, it's immaterial. You'll make it work with good coaching from Patton, as you had alluded to.
If you're the Browns GM, you would have taken Sammy Watkins. The Bills call up and offer the first-round pick.
Well,
you would have said
again,
no.
My timeline's off. If Josh Gordon's still a member, then no, of course
they
not.
They might have known because it came out the day
after
the draft.
That's what I mean. It's close.
Like, what if they knew? Let's say they knew.
Well,
it's kind
of like guys who fight suspensions. The team kind of knows like they're fighting like a performance enhancement, like 4-game suspension. They fight an appeal. The team knows about the appeal process, but they don't announce it until the league rules. I'm sure the Browns had some inkling of Josh Gordon. I'm sure they had an inkling.
If they knew, you would have told Buffalo to pound sand.
I don't know.
All right. We're squarely on the fence here at the Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. But
I don't think I would ever take a wide receiver with a top 10 pick.
I mean, that's silly, too. Because Calvin Johnson, AJ Green.
And you're getting that offer from Buffalo is really too good to pass up.
I'd feel better taking it.
They almost fell over when they got the phone call. Mm-hmm.
I mean, nowadays, with the way that the passing game is, I'd feel more comfortable taking a lights-out receiver top 10 than a lights-out running back.
Yeah.
I mean, Bishop Sankey didn't even get drafted until the second round.
2 years in a
and
row.
He's highly touted.
I wouldn't take a running back either.
No question. I mean, that's fair.
We talked last week about how Trent Richardson ruined it for every good college running back after him because no one will take anyone in the first round because he was such a bust and a terrible football player.
He looked like he was running with a fork in his back behind Joe Thomas. Other than that, I thought the world of him.
Ben Tate is no Trent Richardson. Just let me tell you.
And Cleveland is very thankful for that.
I can't wait till you eat crow.
Good Browns talk, cowboy.
All right, guys. Great segment. I really like, someone's going to be right. Someone's going to be wrong on the Browns here. You know, I'm going to be right because I'm the cowboy. But lastly, we're going to do our predictions as we normally do. As always, we're going to see if Cowboy Senior picks anyone else to go 0-16 as he did in his podcast debut. But Cowboy Senior, you've been probably the most opinionated on this division. How do you see it shaking out? We need a record and we need the order of finish.
Well, going back to my 0-16 pick for Jacksonville, which you Cowboy accused me of going way out on a limb on, and I thought about it after the show. You picked them 1-15. 0-16 is way out on a limb. And you picked them 1-15. I only went one game further out on that limb than you went, Cowboy.
It's only happened once. That's why I went 1-15 because it's just as difficult to go to lose all your games as it is to win all of them.
They are that bad. They're worse than the Steelers.
So, hey, even the 91 Patriots won that one game under Dick McPherson, senior.
Let's not throw anything at Coach Mack. He was all right. Okay. I really like the Bengals to win the division and strong and be a contender for that AFC championship, to be right up there as, you know, right there battling the Patriots and the Denver Broncos for the AFC title. I'll call them 12-4. Cincinnati 12-4. Then, like last year, there's going to be a tie for second place in this division with two teams 8-8, the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. And holding things up at 5-11, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt there. You figure they'll beat the Jets, and somehow they're going to win four others. The lowly Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wow, Cowboys Senior, we won't put your picture up just in case you ever happen to be in Pittsburgh. Rocky Boyle.
Okay, here we go. And thanks again for the opportunity. I hope I didn't embarrass myself on my initial debut here at Place to Be Nation.
Yeah, just with your GMing skills for the Browns, but it's okay. We embrace debate here.
And I'll certainly argue for the sake of arguing. I'd like the Steelers to win the division. 10-6. I see the Bengals also finishing 10-6 with Pittsburgh winning the tiebreaker. I'm going to say the Ravens go 6-10, finish third, and I see the Browns finishing 5-11, but a spirited 5-11, losing a lot of close 7 or under point games and showing improvement. I just don't see it this year in particular, but I think they have done a lot of good things.
Right, thanks.
I see the Steelers winning it.
Putting your money where your mouth is there, Rocky. Big difference on the Steelers there. So someone's gonna be eating some serious crow here at the lounge at the end of the year. Keith Schmidt.
All right, I'll take Cincinnati to win the division at 11-5. Baltimore second place at 10-6 with a wild card berth. The Steelers 8-8, and the Browns 7-9.
All right, so Keith's got that's marked improvement for most of the division.
Yeah.
So we're gonna be picking some teams to lose to have some pretty bad records in the old AFC East next week. Everybody can't go 9-7, you know. So, all right, I'm up. Bengals first place 13-3. Pittsburgh, second, 9-7. Cleveland, third, 8-8. Baltimore, fourth, 5-11. So that's how it shakes out. So this has been a fantastic football segment. Really enjoyed having Rocky's enthusiasm here at the lounge. Hoping you can make it. Again, like Cowboy Senior, once Rocky's in the lounge, it's tough to actually get him in front of the microphone. He's usually got a bunch of $1 bills in his hands, and we can't find them. That's all right.
Guilty as charged, Cowboy.
Please take a listen. We're going to take a quick break, and there's a bunch of other solid podcasts here at PlaceToBeNation.com. Whether you're a sports fan, please listen to this Extra Point, hosted by my buddies Scott Criscolo and George Rebolito, Dr. G. Wrestling, there's a lot of wrestling stuff and a lot of pop culture stuff. So we'll talk about that on the break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some things.
When I dream of fairy tales, I think of me and Shelly. See, she's my type of hype, and I can't stand when brothers tell me.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Hit it!
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Again, spirited NFL debate. Cowboy Senior had to leave the lounge. He ran out of money. They in the Sports Lounge, if you're not paying, you're freaking out of here. And Cowboy Senior spent all his money before we even started the show tonight. So don't know how that's going to go over at home, Cowboy Senior, but can't wait to find out next week. So next up, we have our baseball talk. And don't have anything in particular to talk about. Is anything, you know, any huge news, anything like that. So we want to just take a quick look at some of the divisional races and see kind of where we're at versus where we thought we were at during our divisional breakdowns that we did. So Keith, I was thinking let's start off in the AL Central. I think it's by far the most interesting race right now with all the moves the Tigers made, and this Kansas City Royals team just won't go away. What do you think?
Yeah, the Royals are reminding me of last year's Pirates team, with, you know, kind of the little engine that could, right? They don't have, you know, too many players that are, you know, you would call elite stars, right? Their most recognizable player is probably Alex Gordon. Yeah. And, you know, you're not going to see him on the cover of Sports Illustrated anytime soon. But they're playing really good baseball. They just got Josh Willingham from the Minnesota Twins, so that should help their outfield offense.
Cheap, you know, power.
Right, you know, it could probably mash lefties, right? Their pitching staff has been phenomenal, surprisingly phenomenal. I mean, James Shields, Bruce Chen, Duffy, Jason Vargas is looking awesome, and they have one of the better bullpens in the league, and right now they have the lead over the Tigers. And the Tigers may be in trouble here with Anibal Sanchez with his, I believe he strained his oblique, so he's on the disabled list.
Yeah, they say he's not even going to start doing anything for a couple of weeks.
Right, right. So, you know, that's a big arm to lose. And then you got Verlander, who got rocked in the first inning the other day. He didn't even get through the inning, I don't think. And he's got shoulder soreness now, so he's probably DL-bound as well.
They did say Verlander, Verlander had that ridiculous streak of, I don't know if he's like never missed a start or something, hasn't missed a start in a long time, so he's going to miss his next one, but they say that they did an MRI on the shoulder, and he had soreness, but there's no structural damage there, so he's probably just missing the one start, but as we talked about when we reviewed the AL Central, Verlander's not the guy that he was. He's just not. So these power guys, when the arm starts to go, some of them learn to pitch, and then some of them are Justin Verlander. Yeah. And losing Sanchez kills them, I think. That really, really hurts them. And I mean, they would be in massive trouble if they didn't make that move for Price. Tampa Bay didn't just hand them Price. Although Drew Smyly has looked very good.
He has. You know, poor them. I mean, now they only have David Price and Max Scherzer. I mean, oh, man. Poor Detroit. But that's probably going to be the race that goes right down to the wire. Both leagues, the Central race, I think both of those races are going right down to the wire.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point with that Pittsburgh comparison to the Royals. I mean, it's a small market team. They just got a bunch of good players. No one great, but I mean, Salvador Perez, a plus catcher, right?
Yes, he is.
Billy Butler, who hasn't had the best year, but has turned it on a little bit of late. Professional hitter, right? Maybe doesn't give you the most pop in the world, but professional hitter. Yep. Nori Aoki, good guy at the top of the order. Alcides Escobar is a good defensive shortstop. They play the game right. I despise Mike Moustakas and don't think he should be in the major leagues.
He's kind of useless.
When you have a small market team and they take a guy second overall, I mean they're kind of just stuck with him. Yeah. On paper, Detroit should still walk away with this division, but the way things are going, I mean, I'm starting to believe in Kansas City.
I am as well. And you know what? They're doing this without their best hitter, Eric Hosmer.
Right.
Who's been on the DL for, I don't know, maybe the last 2 weeks, and they've been hot as a pistol for the last 2 weeks. So.
Right, absolutely.
It's a really good team.
So, looking at that's a great segue, Keith, to the other Central, to the NL Central. Now, when we were reviewing the NL Central, I made what I felt like at the time, right afterwards, was the worst prediction I've ever made here on the Sports Lounge, which was that Milwaukee had about a 7-game lead. You guys all said it was smoke and mirrors, and I stuck with them and picked them to win the division. Well, they folded like pancakes right after that. St. Louis caught them, and it looked like that was going to be that. But the Brewers have hung in there, and the Brewers, they're 2.5 games up as we tape this, and I think they can do it. Did you see the start that kid Mike Fiers put out there today? I mean, 6 innings, 14 strikeouts. I mean, you can do the math there. If they left him in, we might have been talking Clemens Kerry Wood territory there with
he would have thrown 300 pitches too.
Right, but I mean, this is a team we talked about. They can hit the ball. They have a pretty vicious lineup. Carlos Gomez is the real freaking deal, man.
He is.
I mean, he's one of those guys the stat mavens don't like because he swings at everything, right? But I think there's enough of a sample size there now that this kid, something clicked, and he is just, he's a 30-30 guy every year, I think, now. LaCroix is a very, very good hitting catcher. Aramis Ramirez is healthy and raking.
Yep.
Braun is Braun. If he turns it on, I mean, they could be real dangerous. And Chris Davis isn't a bad player. The pitching was the problem with them. But, Keith, what do you think of that staff, the way it's currently constructed?
Knock on wood, they're pitching very well. I really like that Jimmy Nelson that just came up from the minors. He's their number one prospect, and he's pitching like it right now. Kyle Loesch sprained his ankle yesterday. Who knows what's going to happen? He may, I don't think he actually, he twisted his ankle during an at-bat, so we'll see if he has to miss any time, but he's been having a resurgent career year. Willy Peralta, 14-7? Really? Where'd this guy come from, right? Giovanni Gallardo's having a bounce-back year. I really like this staff, and they can definitely compete with St. Louis, with Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh for that division. I think they can hold on to that lead.
And they're similar to the Angels, I think, in a lot of ways, in that the pitching, because of the lineup, the pitching doesn't have to be, they don't need the A's pitching staff to succeed. But these guys have been pitching over their heads, but they've been doing it all season. Peralta, in particular, big-time prospect, throws gas and was never really able to put it together at all, would just get lit up like a Roman candle, has seemed to, he started off the year real good, kind of waiting for it to turn around, hit a couple of rough stretches. But if you look, you look at his last 7 starts, never more than 3 runs. I believe he was the first pitcher to 14 wins in the major leagues.
Yep, he was.
I mean, if he keeps pitching like this, and Gallardo seems to have figured out how to pitch.
Yep.
Loesch is a professional pitcher. Jimmy Nelson got knocked around when he first came up, but he seemed to put it together. And if this guy fires, is it just a flash in the pan? I mean, they could really make some noise.
They could. I like this team. I still like St. Louis a little better, and maybe it's the veteran presence they have, with Wainwright and Matt Holliday, and Yadier Molina should be coming back soon. But like I said, the two central races are going to go right down to the end of September. So hopefully they have some series against each other, you know, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, which they should because they're all in the same division. But Cincinnati, I remember predicting a wild card berth for them, overtaking, matter of fact, over jumping over Milwaukee as well. So I'm going to eat a little crow with that one.
Probably, yeah.
We'll see, though. There's still 40 games to go, so there's 6 games back. It's not looking too good for them. But.
Pittsburgh, 2.5 games back right now. Real obvious what's going on there. Andrew McCutchen, their all-world MVP outfielder. You know, he's digged up on that ridiculous beaning that he took from the idiot Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, just completely unnecessary. He was pissed off about it, as he should have been. You know, you tried to avoid the DL, They finally put him on the DL 2 days ago, retroactive, I believe, to August 4th. They need to tread water while he's out because they don't have the depth. I mean, getting Starling Marte back and him actually waking up and playing well—he
came back a house of fire, didn't he?
Has helped, and Travis Snyder's got a little bit of power. But overall, I mean, they need McCutchen to be able to stay in this race. And if he's going to be sidelined much longer, they're going to fall out of the race. In my opinion, what do you think?
I have to agree with you. They're going to have to rely on pitching. And I don't think their pitching staff is good enough compared to those other teams. Liriano has looked really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, Morton, Volquez, and Locke and Worley. I don't know. I don't know if it's deep enough. And I think they hurt themselves when they made that trade, the Jason Grilly for Frieri trade. They cut Frieri. They don't even have him anymore.
I mean, his ERA was over 10.
Oh, I thought it was a stupid trade on their part from the beginning. I mean, Jason Grilly was an all-star closer last year. He had some rough bets. I mean, we don't know what's been going on behind closed doors, and, you know, maybe it was time for him to go, but I don't think their bullpen's as strong as it was last year. I don't think they're going to have enough, especially with McCutchen going down.
At the very least, with Grilly, if you want to move him, fine. Even if there's stuff going on behind the scenes, whatever. If you think Melanson can fill the role, and he has filled the role, he's a good closer. Fine. You had to be able to get more for him from a contender than that stiff Frieri. The guy doesn't even belong in the major leagues.
I think both GMs looked at it and said, okay, change of scenery might do both these guys good. But Anaheim swindled them. That's what happened there.
The rich get richer, as they say.
You're not kidding.
Gregory Polanco looks like the real deal. He's an uber prospect, and he looks like the real deal. What do you think of that? We're talking about this year, but just while we're on the Pirates, what do you think of that outfield for the future? Polanco, McCutchen, and Starling Marte.
I think that might be the best young outfield in the game.
Yeah, I think it is, you know, pretty clearly.
I definitely think it is. I think Polanco's... I remember doing the Central preview when we did it, and I told you I heard a scout say that Polanco has the most tools out of all three of those outfielders. That's scary when you're considering the MVP is in center field. So, and he came up from AAA, and he's been doing really, really well. I think he's got, four or five home runs already, 10 stolen bases. You know, he's hitting 260, but, you know, he'll get there. He's very talented.
True five-tool guy.
Yes.
Just like McCutchen.
Yes.
And Marte's, and I mean, he was excellent last year. A real good table setter, runs like the wind. I mean, he started out slow this year, but I mean, it seems like that DL stint did him wonders. Yeah. And, they're going to have, in that outfield, I mean, probably two guys whose ceiling is MVP. I mean, that's...
Correct.
Kind of likens you back to the day of Bonds and Van Slyke and Bobby Bowe out there back in the day. So, you know, run, Sid, run. That's for our Atlanta fans. looking at the other divisions, Baltimore has really separated themselves. So they're the train that keeps on going. I mean, I blasted them for not doing more at the deadline. But that could still rear its head because that pitching staff's nothing to write home about. But it looks like they're going to walk away with the American League East.
I believe that they'll definitely take the East. Now we'll see who they get matched up against come postseason. If Anaheim gets in, and they end up matching up there, that, you know, that could be a good matchup for them because neither team has great starting pitching. So, you know, it'll be a slugfest. You know, we'll be seeing 9-7 playoff games, which we don't normally see. But I think if they match up with an Oakland or Detroit, they might be in trouble.
Yeah, and speaking of Oakland and Anaheim, you know, looking at Oakland, they are just so clearly the best team in baseball. I mean, if you look at their run differential compared to the rest of the league, so they're plus 168. On the season and run differential. The next best team in baseball is the Nationals at plus 89. I mean, they're doubling them up. And they've added Lester, and Lester's pitched like he's going to win the Cy Young since he's been over there. And Anaheim's still keeping pace with them. Or the LA Angels of Anaheim, however you... We always do this. We East Coast guys, you know, sorry. But, you know, they have the second best record in the majors, I believe. Anaheim, the two best records of the majors are in the same division. Anaheim said that the Angels sit two games back right now, keeping pace with that juggernaut A's team. It looks pretty clearly like whoever doesn't win that division, they're the number one wild card.
Yeah, right? I would say that's a good bet right there.
And I mean, the Mariners could very well slide into that number two wild card.
They could, and like we said last week, if they do, and it lines up where Felix Hernandez is pitching that wild card game, good night to whoever's playing them.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a real possibility of the Angels and the Tigers in that play-in game.
Could be. Or Kansas City. Yeah, and I mean,
you imagine though that would be the best play-in game that we've ever had, right? With Felix Hernandez, I assume it would be. Who does Detroit pitch in that game? Do you pitch Price or Scherzer?
I think Scherzer gets the nod because he's been in Detroit. But that would be fantastic, wouldn't it? That really would. I mean, that sounds like 1-0, 2-1 all day long. That'd probably come down to the bullpens.
It sounds like 1-0, 2-1, but both teams can freaking hit. Cano could win the MVP with the season he's having. He's having a great, great year.
Yes, he is.
Detroit's, you know, their lineup is obviously one of the best in baseball.
But good pitching shuts down good hitting, you know, most times. So, that would be interesting. That would definitely be interesting. But I don't see Seattle overtaking Kansas City or Detroit, whichever one of those two teams. I think the six teams are pretty much there right now for the playoffs right now.
It's Seattle only half a game back, so it's going to be interesting. Definitely going to be interesting.
I wonder what the strength of schedule is for both of those teams the rest of the way. If I'm not mistaken, Kansas City has the easiest path.
Yeah. I think
they play Minnesota and the White Sox quite a few times the rest of the way out. So
based on the division, I mean, the Seattle has to have the toughest. I mean, they're playing the Angels in the A's.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, and I believe the way they try to stack division games at the end of the season, right?
So, correct.
Now, looking at the other divisions, I mean, a lot of, you know, they want to say they've been decided, but the Nationals seem to really be the cream rising to the top there. They have a 6-game lead.
That would be a colossal meltdown if they lost.
Yeah. And I mean, now they, given their history with the Braves, if the Braves come back and win that division, right, suicides in D.C.
How many games do they have against each other? Because the Braves are big brother to Washington when they play head-to-head. So, at least that's how it's been in the past.
Right, so it could be a scenario where Washington's conquering big brother. So it looks like they have...
It's one series, two series.
They have two series left against the Braves. I don't think it's enough.
I don't think so either.
Even if the Braves sweep those two series, although, you know, they are playing the Dodgers, but then you see they got some cupcakes too. You know, Philly,
the Mets.
The Mets. Poor Mets.
We can't do a podcast without bashing the Mets at least once.
You know, I'm proud of them. They're a little better than I thought they would be, right?
They got a bright future with some young pitching, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. And, you know, the National League West, the Dodgers, I believe I picked San Francisco to win that division. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. That Dodgers roster is just too loaded. Although Hanley Ramirez just went down, which is, you know, concerning to me. Maybe not so much in the division race, but come playoff time, I mean, they need to be at full strength to compete with the Nationals, who have really stepped their game up, and even whoever comes out of the Central.
Yeah, the Dodgers, you know, like you said, Hanley went down. Hyunjin Ryu came out of his last start with something in his, I think it was his left buttocks.
And so, I believe Josh Beckett's probably Beckett's done for his career.
Yeah, Beckett's done. But, you know, Adrian Gonzalez and Matt Kemp have both heated up tremendously over the last couple of weeks. So, and with that, you know, their top two, Kershaw and Greinke, it's going to be very hard to beat that team.
So, Keith, we got to give you credit where credit's due. When it looked like Kemp was done for, you said, nope, he's going to return to that MVP form. And I think just pretty much as soon as you said it, it lit a fire under him because he's been the best hitter in baseball since you said it.
I think he listens to the Sports Lounge.
So Matt, you got some fans here at the Sports Lounge.
But, go 2-7.
But that roster is just
it's
just
stacked.
Loaded.
I mean, it's stacked. And they actually have a couple guys offensively in the minors right now. Jock Peterson, he'd be starting in almost every other outfield in the league.
They don't even have right anything they, close they
can't,
to a place
they can't
for.
Bring him up. They can't even play him. That's why I thought Matt Kemp was going to get dealt, because Jock Peterson's a true center fielder. Kemp's not happy not playing center field. But luckily for the Dodgers' sake, they didn't move him because he's really, really hot right now. Crawford's been actually pretty good the past week. And Puig is Puig. He's steady Eddie over there. A trade we never talked about, Darwin Bonney coming over from the Cubs.
Yep.
He's not a superstar, but he'll make the plays, and he'll give you a decent at-bat, you know, maybe bunt a runner over. You know, he's actually not bad.
Yeah, they're sure happy they have him now.
Yeah, you're not kidding. They'd be bumming without him.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Crawford. I mean, I'm happy they didn't trade Kemp, too, because they would have gotten 30 cents on the dollar. And that natural talent wins out a lot of times.
Absolutely.
And that's what happened here. Crawford's the guy that's, you know, he could take or leave him. If you're looking to make room for the hot prospects, that's the guy who you can send to the bench.
But that's a lot of money. A lot of money. I think he's owed more money than Matt Kemp is. And he's one-tenth the player he is, so.
If that.
I mean, I don't know what the exact figure is. Let's just say it's $80 million. They'd have to send $65 million to move Crawford.
Right.
Where Kemp, it would have been maybe, you know, if they would have traded him at the deadline when he wasn't as hot as he is now, they might have got 50 cents on the dollar for him.
Yeah, and Crawford does have value, a little more value in the National League where you can pinch run. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, he'll be the highest paid pinch runner in Major League history. And I wish Cowboy Senior was here to give us his thoughts on Carl Crawford, because I'm sure that they're, you know, right down the middle, but slanted toward negative, given his time in Boston. But so, who do you think's coming out of the National League?
As it looks now, I think there's going to be at least two teams from the Central. Definitely St. Louis. It's looking like Milwaukee. I had originally taken Cincinnati, but I don't see them crawling out of that hole. What else we got? San Francisco and the Dodgers. And, of course, the Nationals. So there's your six. So
yeah. Seems like it's the American League's pretty much the class this year with those. But the American League West.
But the Dodgers. The Dodgers, you know, the National League is actually top-heavy. You know, there's two teams there. Washington, they have a great pitching staff, too. So if they get hot, you know, and a pretty good lineup, they could beat anybody. So can the Dodgers. And even San Francisco, for that matter. But, yeah, I agree. I think the American League teams are better.
And I think it's a shame for a team like Oakland that they're going to have to go through this freaking murderer's row just to make it to the World Series. I think Oakland versus the Dodgers is by far the most fan-friendly World Series that we could see. And, I mean, what an event in California. I mean, you know, especially with the stuff going on where the Raiders might move back to Los Angeles, you know the city of Oakland's got a little chip on its shoulder.
California's going to possibly have four teams in the playoffs with Frisco, the Angels,
yep,
the Dodgers, and the A's. Four teams. That's pretty well represented.
Absolutely.
So, and any one of those matchups would be huge for California. That's for sure. So, and they'd all be good series too. I think personally, I think all four of those teams have either the talent or could get hot enough to win.
Right. I mean, it's just with the A's and the Dodgers. I mean, if you just think about the juicy pitching matchups of that
Lester
series.
And Kershaw, and then Greinke and who knows, Samardzija or Kazmir, Sonny Gray. Oh, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
And the way the A's have been hitting. I mean, you look at their lineup. I mean, even without Cespedes, I mean, it doesn't seem that intimidating. And then you look and see that they've scored the most runs in baseball this year. And as a Red Sox fan, the Red Sox scored the most runs in baseball last year without the most intimidating lineup world. That any is as good as the Dodgers staff is, they're a team that you haven't been really able to hold under four runs all season.
Right.
You know, so
they always seem to get that timely hit, you know.
To beat them, the Dodgers are going to have to hit this ridiculous staff that they have. And it's just going to be fantastic, and I can't wait. This is the best. I mean, yeah, as a Red Sox fan, we try not to be too outside of Cowboy Senior. We try not to be too biased here. So, as a Red Sox fan, this series season has kind of sucked to be a Red Sox fan.
Well, we'll give them a mulligan. We had the trophy last year.
Of course, and I like what they did. I think it's building for the future, and they played better of late. And I like that, you know, Cespedes showing a flair for the dramatic, which is something we like to see. I know he's a little dinged up now. I question whether they how dinged up he is, because I know there's something
he played today.
Yeah, if they finish in the bottom 10, right? If they finish in the bottom 10 and they sign a player that signed a qualifying offer, they don't have to give up the pick.
So you might start seeing some more fantasy.
So I think you're going to see the major league equivalent of what the basketball teams do. You know, we're not trying to lose, but we're going to throw guys like Alan Webster out there every night and see what and see what happens. Koji Uehara has just been just as good as he was last year.
Yep.
But bodes well for the future. I think it was the right move, not getting rid of him. And back to the larger point, even though as a home team fan it hasn't been a great baseball season, beyond that, it's been a fantastic baseball season. I love the fact that there are so many just outs. Like last year, you know, love the Red Sox, love the team that won. But the Reds, there were a lot of flawed teams, right? Every team seemed to have a fatal flaw. The Tigers were the Tigers and the Dodgers were probably the class of the major leagues. But then, you know, the Tigers with Cabrera running around on one leg are not the same. And the Dodgers just imploded in the playoffs. This year, yeah, I mean, you got four or five teams that are just, you don't see a lot of holes.
No, not many at all. And, you know, we talked about Baltimore earlier. And that's a scary team, man. That really is a scary team. Tillman and Gausman, two highly touted prospects, you know, when they were coming up. And they're pitching well. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with them. They're going to give the American League a run for their money. I still think they have the weakest pitching out of any team that would make the playoffs. But that team has that spark. They do. They definitely do.
Absolutely. And I think that, speaking of fatal flaws, if it was last year, I'd probably pick them to win the whole thing. But I think this year, just there to go in a series against a team like Oakland, where the pitching matchups are just going to be so one-sided in every game, and with a team like Oakland, their lineup's been better than yours during the season, it's a tough hill to climb. Now, if someone takes out Oakland, now we're talking. Because I mean, you can put the Orioles in there against this, you know, this gimpy Tigers team, and you know they may be able to overcome the pitcher matchup. Or Orioles Angels, every game will be 10-9. It'll be great. But I think
I'm actually secretly rooting for that.
in particular, that Oakland, I think they just don't match up well to them. I think it's just too, it's just, I see the A's scoring 6 or 7 runs against that Orioles staff, and I don't see any team scoring 6 or 7 runs a game against the Oakland staff. Just my take. But
I agree.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic, and keep tuning into the Sports Lounge, because Keith and I and the crew, we're going to be diving in every week to as the pennant race heats up and looking at the races and just taking you through and giving you the in-depth analysis you've come to expect here on the Sports Lounge. So that's going to do it for Keith tonight. Keith, thanks again. As always, great stuff.
Welcome,
great stuff from you. You're a little less boisterous this week. I mean, did the cowboy put you in your place or something last week?
I'm feeling a little under the weather. I think the bartender we had here today is making watered down drinks. I don't know.
Never good. We'll expect to have the fiery Keith Schmidt back next week when we talk more baseball, but we're talking AFC East next week, which is, given what you've heard, I'm sure you guys know as the fans that this is going to be a spirited discussion. So, Keith, great baseball segment, and again, we're going to have a break now, so please tune into the other Place to Be Nation podcast, and I'll be back, and we'll talk some Tony Stewart and maybe a little UFC and boxing. So hope you're enjoying it, everyone, and we'll be right back. Where you at? The whole city behind us. Southside, outside, westside, let's ride. Where you at? The whole city behind us.
It ain't nothing to it but to do it. I came here to suck the place down till my body stops pumping red fluid. A-Town, I've been through it, and we steady getting tested, but ready to fill your bubble when we put the lid to it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Boneheads has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Well, folks, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. A little bit of a curveball, a little change of plans here in the Sports Lounge. So Chad Campbell, our esteemed colleague from Atlanta, is not going to be able to make it into the lounge tonight. You know, just to... He didn't give me a reason, but we can all assume the wives don't always allow the husbands into the Sports Lounge. Not so much for the sports talk, but maybe due to some of the extracurricular going on here. So that's perfectly understandable. We want things to be great at home for Chad. So he's not going to join us. So it's just the diehards, just the people closing the lounge out tonight. So there's only two of us left, myself, the cowboy, because I live in this lounge. This lounge is my life. And our new podcast debuter tonight, first time in the lounge, Rocky Boyle back with us. Rocky Boyle.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So Rocky and I are closing the lounge out, and we're going to take things to a serious topic here. Tony Stewart. So for those of you who are not aware of the story, I'm sure most of you are, but for those of you who are not aware of what happened recently, I'll go over it with you. Tony Stewart, the night before his NASCAR race at Watkins Glen, was racing in a sprint car event at a little dirt track close to Watkins Glen. Something that's been described to me as the equivalent of a single-A baseball game or a D3 college game. Just a low-level event where Tony was, you've heard him say, I'm a driver, this is how I fill my time, I like to drive. Well, that's right, I'm a lounger, I fill my time in the lounge. So I can certainly understand having that passion. But what happened was absolutely tragic. He's racing, made some contact with a younger driver, Kevin Ward Jr., and Ward ended out in the wall, got out of his car very angrily, pointing at Stewart. What appeared to be trying to get in front of Stewart, to confront Stewart. And Stewart very tragically hit him and killed him. 20-year-old kid, it's an unbelievable tragedy. It's awful. But the issue itself, I mean, it's definitely something we want to talk about. Because I've seen a lot of talking heads, seen a lot of opinions where people are either on one side of this or the other without a lot of in between. You have the Tony Stewart camp, which is the kid got out of his car during a race. It's a dark track. It's a dirt track. You don't get out of your car. Tony didn't see him. The kid put his own life in danger, basically. And Tony made it, you know, it's tragic car accident. And then you have the other side that points to Tony Stewart's very visible and very well-known reputation as being a very combative driver with other drivers. He's had multiple altercations with other drivers, some on the track, and just basically being a reckless individual with a hot temper, and that he was at fault. So I know Rocky's got some thoughts on this, so I'm going to turn it over to him first, then I'll give my thoughts.
First and foremost, my condolences go out to the Ward family. It's a terrible loss. Taking someone at 20 years old in the prime of their life is an absolute tragedy, no matter what side of the fence you're on. My condolences and thoughts and prayers are with his family. On to the Tony Stewart incident. My thought process is as follows. A guy who's raced as much as Tony Stewart has in his career, you gotta damn well know better. I know it's nighttime out at the track, and I just don't see how you can't see the kid. There was a car directly in front of Stewart after Ward got out of his car that was easily able to avoid the kid, and Stewart just absolutely nailed him. He gunned the engine. You can hear it as clear as day. I saw it on the news, and it was a little choppy. I was able to rewatch it afterwards, and you hear the engine rev. What do you think's going to happen? Perhaps if it's a Brad Keselowski, a Jeff Gordon, one of NASCAR's nice guys, one of racing, like one of their golden children, so to speak. I might not feel so strongly about it, but a guy like Stewart, who has been fined numerous times for his antics, who's notoriously, you know, if it's not rubbing, it's not racing kind of mentality, who I've seen throw punches at other competitors during post-race interviews, maybe I wouldn't feel so strongly. I feel just like anyone who's involved in vehicular homicide, I would hope that the authorities aren't starstruck by Mr. Stewart, and I hope that they take the time to investigate and use their eyes like I did for the 30 seconds or so and see the truth with their own eyes. How do you feel about that, Cowboy? That's about all I got on that.
No, it's a great take, Rock, and I mean, it's an opinion. So the authorities have a second video that we haven't seen that gives a different angle. They haven't said what that angle shows. So I'm not going to come out and say he hit the kid on purpose, because I don't think that. I don't think he hit the kid on purpose. I'd like to believe that he's a, you know, as combative as he is, he's not going to run someone over with his car. That's just not what he's doing. What I do think occurred, and what it looked like to me on the video, was that the kid's pissed off. The kid's got his finger out. The kid's trying to confront Stewart. Stewart, instead of heading way low on the track like you should, maybe wanted to buzz the kid, you know, maybe kick a, you know, and then the engine revs, maybe he's trying to kick a little dirt up on the kid, and it goes horribly wrong. I mean, that's what I saw, which is certainly criminal. It's not homicide, right? But it's certainly, I mean, isn't that the definition of manslaughter, when you do something recklessly illegal where you're not intending to injure or kill someone, but it happens? I certainly think he should be brought up on charges. I think it's a joke if he isn't. The fact that I think he probably will. Will he do time or anything? I don't know. It's just a tragic situation all around. Now, what I'd like to talk about is the fact that he even considered racing the next day.
Shameful. Absolutely shameful. Like, what kind of person are you, like, to just get in the car the next day? He just shows no remorse. That's, by definition, psychopathic behavior. You have to show some respect for the dead. You know, whether it was intended or otherwise, whether you lost your head for that split second, or whether it was a poor stunt or a poor maneuver gone awry, you have to show respect for the family. And I didn't care for the update when I saw that Stewart intended on racing. I mean, for whatever reason, either he had a change of heart or his handlers thought better and said, hey, we better pump the brakes here, kid. Either way, I definitely lost a lot of respect for Mr. Stewart, no matter what the outcome of any civil case may be, or whatever the authorities might find.
Yeah, and sadly, Rock, I think it was the handlers. Because the first thing you heard was some business-as-usual bullshit, which is, I mean, that's, it's just, it's disgraceful. And, I mean, it's obviously someone in his camp thought better of it. I mean, to me, they didn't even need to be an announcement that he wasn't racing. I mean, obviously, he shouldn't be racing. I mean, I as you know, what I considered myself to be a decent human being, if I killed another human being doing anything, if I was vacuuming my rug and I somehow killed somebody doing it completely by accident, I wouldn't be able to pick up the vacuum until after years of counseling, you know? I mean,
right.
I mean, I don't think, like, if for him, it shouldn't be, are you going to race again? I mean, I'd have trouble, you know, driving to the store for milk. Never mind being on the track again the next day. And I mean, you know, and then they announced he's not going to race this weekend either. I mean, to me, it's clear cut. The guy's season, the guy's year is over, right? I mean, how can you get back in the race car? And, you know, one other point I'd like to bring up, and I heard this somewhere, and I thought it was just a fantastic point, was that Tony Stewart was so far and away the best driver on that track. They're the equivalent of Adrian Peterson going and playing running back in a Division III game. It's something Stewart's one of the few drivers that do this, that, you know, racing's his life, and he
will drive anything, there's no question.
No, and he just does it. He doesn't do it. I think the prize for first place in this event was like $3,000 or something. I mean, it's pocket change for the guy. And he's doing it because that's what he wants to do. He likes to race. But it begs the question, if the guy, like Rock said, there was a guy in front of Tony Stewart who was able to avoid avoid the kid without a problem, and if Stewart is that much better of a racer and a driver than everybody on the track, how does he, you know, if he's taken every precaution to not hit the kid, how does he hit the kid? I think he was, you know, like I said, I think he was trying to buzz him, trying to make him look bad. It went horribly wrong, and now, you know, this poor soul paid with his life, and it's just a tragedy.
Even if you're trying to buzz him at that point, what do you have to prove, buddy? I mean, come on now. Like you said, they're racing for a few grand, but, you know, people who race in those kind of stakes, like, that kind of money's important for repair, for your crew. Just, like you said, it's pocket change for Stewart. He probably spent more than that going out, you know, the night before. You know, there's no question. It's not about the money. To me, it just blows my mind. I really feel like within like a millisecond he saw the car in front of him move and then he hit the engine. Now, I'm not saying Stewart was trying to hit him, but he certainly, at the very least, lost his temper and exhibited very poor and, in this case, fatal judgment. And it's clear as day if you watch the video, in my opinion. I would hope and I would pray that someone isn't that depraved and would intentionally kill another competitor, and regardless of what happened prior.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think Rock and I are in pretty much full agreement here that Tony deserves the lion's share of culpability in this tragic incident. And, you know, in the Sports Lounge, we like to have fun and we like to joke around, but we also, you know, we'll tackle the issues that are a little harder to talk about. And hopefully we've given some clarity to this one for our listeners. So, again, because Chad's not here, we're gonna, and there's not a ton going on MMA wise right now, or boxing wise. It's gonna be okay to skip a week there. So we're gonna skip the MMA boxing update and close the show, and we'll dedicate the show to the memory of Kevin Ward Jr. and, you know, kid doing what he loved. He lost his temper too, as a lot of us have. A lot of us are still sitting here, though.
And the difference is, Ward's a 20-year-old racer. How much experience does he have, figuratively, versus a guy of Stewart's pedigree? That's all. Absolutely. If I may interject at that point.
No, absolutely, absolutely. So, it's been a great show. It's been great having Rock on. I hope he can join us again. He provided some great analysis there, and I loved arguing with him about the Cleveland Browns. It's always fun to see who's going to be right and who's going to be wrong in these situations, because there's certainly bragging rights. And, you know, Rock and I have been close friends for a very long time, and we've had a million of these arguments where we're not writing stuff down. So to actually have it recorded for me to be able to play back when I'm right, because I'm always right, it's going to be awesome. What do you think about that, Rock?
Well, again, thank you for having me on the podcast, Roger. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward to working with or against you in the near future. Yeah. You know I'm not wrong. And, you know, I'd love other members of the podcast to come on to the lounge to just remind Roger who was right and who was wrong. And the tape doesn't lie, kids. Thanks again for the opportunity. I look forward to working with everyone in the future.
Yeah, and with that, we're gonna close the show. And as always, just please stay tuned for next week. The podcast is going to be weekly going forward. As we preview the divisions, we're previewing the AFC East next week, which is just going to be fantastic. It's going to be a real, real spirited and hopefully unbiased look at the division that Cowboy Senior's beloved Patriots reside in, and my beloved Patriots too. But I, you know, Cowboy Senior keeps it right down the middle, but I actually keep it right down the middle, if you know what I mean. So, everybody, it's been a great time. Please tune in next week. Cowboy out. Your body says love, your mind says sexy. Love me sexy. Love me sexy. Sexy. We'll take it and we'll all be sexy.
Zone.